Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metal Magdalene with Jet. Tonight we have with us Barney Greenway of Napalm Death. Welcome to the show, Barney.
Hello.
Now, okay, Barney, Napalm Death, been around some 30 years. You have been in the band for close to 23 years already, having made most of the band's albums with them. How would you describe the progression of the band from when you did Harmony Corruption up until Utilitarian?
Yeah, it's been pretty natural, you know. The thing is that we're, in terms of when we make music, we're very spontaneous. But people that listen to the band generally tell us that no two albums sound the same. Mm-hmm. So that's like the perfect result, really. You know, you've got the spontaneity, but you've also got this very differentiating kind of sound.
Mm-hmm.
First. And also important that some, you know, we may sort of, there may be a couple of different things here and there, a couple of different sort of textures sound-wise,
mm-hmm.
but you can never mistake a Napalm album. I think they're always, at the primary level, fast, furious, and chaotic, and, you know you're going to get something that's you know, a couple of metres away from going off the rails, you know?
Right.
That to me is a good thing, you know?
And you guys have been busy as hell this year. I was looking over all the things you've been doing. Besides your touring, you put out a new release, of course, Utilitarian, at the beginning of the year. You did a split with Converge. You're putting out a split with the Melvins as well.
Yeah.
Now, are splits something that you enjoy? And how do you think listeners can benefit from splits more than just your regular?
Well, I think that's... the whole thing about the scene, you know,
mm-hmm.
it always talks about scenes, bands and scenes and stuff. I mean, it's one very positive aspect of the scene is that the community thing allows you to come together, and a very much independent music as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can, whenever you want to, you can approach a band and you can say, look, let's do a 7-inch or a 12-inch, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were several years when we didn't do them.
Mm-hmm.
Not specifically because we didn't want to do them, it's just that things kind of didn't roll around in that way, you know.
Right.
We always seem to have something else on our minds.
Mm-hmm.
But since Utilitarian come out, basically, us and Converge came to an agreement. It was almost like they wanted to do it with us and we wanted to do it with them. You know, it wasn't a case of one band going to another and the other band going, well, let me think about that. You know,
it was, right.
That both bands really wanted to do. And with the Melvins, same thing, you know. I mean, not only that, what great company.
Of course, I know. I was going to say, it's got to be fun.
I mean, Converge, a great band, you know, a band that's arguably out there on their own. I mean, the Melvins, there's nobody like the Melvins.
No.
You know? You know, they've got their own characteristics, that's for sure. And so, I feel quite honoured, you know, to be in them, to be sharing them, vinyl space with two bands like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's great for the listener, too, because they get, you know, more bang for their buck, really.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And I hope people like the EPs, you know. I mean, the one thing for me is, the one thing I've never wanted to do, whatever I do, I don't want to treat these things either as, like, throwaway things.
Right.
Like, it would be very easy to say, mm-hmm. oh, you know, we've got this crappy old track in the book, you know. It's not like that, you know. I approach, whether it's live or studio, in the same way. I always want to do everything as if the last thing I'm going to do of that nature, you know. It better be the best, you know, or at least as much as I can strive for that, you know.
So, right.
That's it for me, you know.
And, you know, I think splits are kind of coming back more. They were super popular, you know, more so, I think, in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they just kind of went away. And I kind of missed them, you know. There's
Converge, you're talking about.
Yes. And, you know, so now they're starting to come back a little more, so it's kind of nice. But getting back to your last release, Utilitarian, were you happy to re-sign with Century Media for this one?
Oh, I was.
Yeah.
I mean, if you followed all the sort of history of, like, certainly my comments by commentary as far as record labels go. It's safe to say that there has been a few occasions when I've been less than complimentary. But, honestly, Jack, I'm not that sort of person.
Nah.
I would not like bag on people unless there was a reason.
Sure.
So you can just take it as that there was definitely a reason. And, you know, credit where credit's due.
Mm-hmm.
Someone comes along, a record label, and works with us and helps us out, and it's mutually a great relationship, then I'll tell people that. You know what I mean? No question. And if you've read the stuff I've said, since I've been with Century Media, it's pretty much all complimentary. And there's good reason for that. They've been great. They've been really great. There is no way on this earth, with all the experiences that we've had, that if we were the record label and they let us down, that we'd re-sign with them. We'd just be like, no matter what they put on the table, we'd be like, sorry. No, because we understand that it's not about what recording fans you can get, or the little perks here and there. It's about whether you know that label's actually beyond the honeymoon period of a month or two, that they're actually going to do stuff for you.
Right.
Help you out when you need help. Be at the end of the phone when you need them to be at the end of the phone. You know, that's what, if you've got those things in place, you're pretty much on a winner. You know, so it's about a bit more than the little sort of the monetary aspect.
Sure.
You know, because in the long run, they can put in some money on the table, but in the long run, if you're looking at a 2 or 3 year period, you need that label to be there for you, especially when you're not the Metallicas of this world. You know, an independent band needs a good label. You know, that's not to say the bands can't do it without labels.
No, but it's hard nowadays too.
It's so hard now. You know, there's a lot of stuff said about the internet and the general network on that sort of thing, and great, some bands can do it, but we have the option to do that, you know, when we're out of contract.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, if I was to sit here and tell you that I could handle a Napalm release, I mean, we're already self-contained. Tons of stuff behind the scenes. I mean, I'm working on Napalm every day, not promo stuff.
Right.
The structure of the band sort of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to sit here and tell you that I could handle a Napalm release, I'd be lying. You know, there's just no way I could do it. You know, I just couldn't.
No.
It's too, you know, we're not a huge band, but there's too much there.
Right.
But certainly for me, you know, to be able to do, you know. And that was a general sort of, the general feeling of the band members, you know.
Mm-hmm. With Century Media. So tell people a little bit about Utilitarian, and did you try any new elements with this recording, or recording styles with this one? Singers, bagpipes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the natural sort of progression of recording, that's kind of, there's nothing you can do about that. It is as it is, you know. So naturally, we certainly didn't take any more time over it. All that was really different about the recording itself was that we split it into chunks, because, you know, I tend to go nuts a little bit at certain points during recording. It's pretty intensive, you know, because when you're rolling out like 20 plus tracks, you know, trying to kill everything in a short couple of weeks, it can be pretty stressful, you know.
Sure.
So we split it up into chunks. We did like, I think a week. I mean, I forget now, but I think it was like a week at a time, you know, like three or four chunks. And so it was a bit better in that respect. But in terms of influences, it's really kind of the same, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could say that my influences are my influences that go back to the 80s, really. If I was to, like, turn around and tell you that I've kind of woken up one morning and discovered all this new kind of way of doing things in terms of influences, again, I'd be lying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Influences are kind of the same. It's what you do with them, you know. So, you know, I'm still influenced by the likes of just to throw out some band names of GBH, Discharge, Anti-Sinex, Negative Approach, Siege, you know, Celtic Frost, Yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, I could go on forever, you know.
Sure.
But I think it's what we do with them. You know, it's what we do with those instruments, how we use them in a Napalm style. And I think one of the specific things is that we have certain fringe influences that aren't always discussed, you know, when we talk to journalists and stuff. I mean, things like the sort of no wave, post-rock, post-punk stuff, however you want to describe it. I mean, bands like Swans, Modern Valentine, all those kinds of bands, really, who have a more ambient kind of sound to them, you know.
Right.
This time we kind of took those influences and instead of doing them straight, like slow and painful or whatever, we actually thought, let's speed them up, you know, let's come into our style. So that's what we did. I mean, I didn't think it had worked, you know, so I thought it sounded a bit Mickey Mouse, you know, but it did work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't really sort of...
Yeah,
I can't really sort of explain it any better than that. You go to the album, you listen to some of the sections where it's quite chaotic, but the vocals are different and the guitars are different. You'll see what I mean.
Sure.
You know, but yeah, so that was the thing, really. And apart from that, no drastic sort of deliberate sideways shifts or anything. You know, I mean, we're Napalm, ultimately, first and foremost. We do Fast and Furious. Primarily what we're doing, you know.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the band's been through, you know, some lineup changes, and, you know, along the years, you know, you had a death. Has all this made you stronger as a band, or, you know?
We were always strong as a band. I think we were always determined, like, to persevere.
Mm-hmm.
But we do handle ourselves perhaps differently to other bands, in that, you know, we don't just look to do the same old, you know. As good as they are and as much as they're a bedrock of when we go out on tour, we don't just do a tour of the States, we don't just do a tour of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We're always looking for places to play that other bands have never been before. And if you look at our history, since I joined the band, certainly, and Mitch and Jesse when he was still alive, you will see that we were the first, you know, to do lots of places, you know, those bands have never been. I mean, Soviet Russia, we were the first, you know, on an independent level to do, you know. And so, as you can imagine, I'm pretty proud of that, you know.
You should be, yeah.
It's things like that keep you on your toes, you know, to go into the unexpected, you know, rather than into a comfort zone. So that's kind of kept us going, you know. We always sort of, had that attitude towards doing things, you know. We were always willing to knuckle down and go and do stuff like that. So, so that kept us going, really. I mean, there will come a time when we decide perhaps that it could be one member, it could be all members, that, you know, we can't dedicate the time to going on the road anymore because of our circumstances, or that, we just haven't got the creative side, the sort of motivation to make new music. Or we try it and it's not coming out like it should, you know, with the same kind of quality for us. And that'll be the time when we have to seriously think about whether we're going to continue or not, you know. So, I mean, we understand that, but right now, at the moment, things are feeling good for us, so we'll persevere, you know, and we'll always try our best, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned how you guys have been, like, the first to go into a lot of these areas that no band has ever gone before. What's it like when you go into these areas? I mean, what are, like, the fans like? What are the people like? I mean, do you ever have trouble with, like, some of these governments that, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, the first thing for me, really, is on a human level. It makes me quite sort of emotional. Not, hopefully that doesn't sound trite, you know. Hopefully it doesn't sound trite, but, you know, to see the happiness on people's faces,
mm-hmm.
to go in and, you, because it shows that you give it toss, you know, that you made the effort to go there when you didn't need to, you know, and the people appreciate that. So that's the first thing that you know that you notice. And, you know, sometimes you will, it will be difficult with the equipment and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You get through it. There's always a solution. There's only real problems when you make barriers, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, that's one thing. Governments is another thing, you know, they are their own animal. Yes, well, I mean, we have had some problems. We are banned from some places, or rather, up until now, we've been refused entry, should I say, because of, well, for one thing, is our faithless, kind of atheistic view on things, you know, mm-hmm. which we've been told. Basically, we were told in one place that we would be allowed to go in there and play as long as we didn't talk about certain things that we were always quite vocal about.
Uh-huh.
And of course, given that we would censor ourselves and water ourselves down, I said, no chance. Not going to happen.
I was going to say, you either said, okay, and then went up there and did it anyways?
Yeah, I know. I mean, obviously, sometimes you've got to be a little bit sensible about these things.
Sure.
You know, if you know there could be serious consequences.
Yeah, no, you don't want to.
You know, you've got to be careful. Having said that, sometimes I am stupid enough to get away, you know, and for example, in Nepal, when I squared up to a police official over there, which was probably quite good, you know, I mean, this guy had a stick like no other stick I've seen, you know. I thought I was going to get hit, you know, but he didn't in the end, but it could easily have happened. So,
I just get
so frustrated. I have a problem with authority overstepping its boundaries, you know, generally,
mm-hmm.
as you kind of might imagine.
Oh, sure.
You know? But you know, so I since I know I will stand up, you know, because I'm sick and tired of being pushed around. I've seen others pushed around, should I say, you know.
Sure.
So, you know, you react accordingly, you know. But,
sometimes you have to, yeah.
You know. I am somewhere, then it's not
good. You guys played in Japan, haven't you?
Yeah.
Now, were you there before and after the disaster happened?
Well, funny enough, there's quite a story to that. We weren't there when it happened. I was there personally just after it happened.
Wow.
And I'll tell you something else. It was an eye-opener. I mean, you think you've seen it on the internet and on the TV?
No, it's...
Right.
It's surreal, yeah.
But we were just there because we did some benefit gigs for the people that were still in shelters.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are still a lot of people over there who have been left with nothing. And to be honest, I love Japan. You know, I actually would like to live there when I'm older, you know, eventually. But in terms of social welfare there, well, there isn't any, really. There was never that kind of structure there. So... people are really kind of stuck with nothing, you know. Yeah, okay, they've got temporary accommodation, but it's not the greatest, you know. And there are people that are stuck there with nothing. So anyway, we were there. We did some of the towns that were the worst affected by the whole tsunami thing. And bear in mind, this was last month, so this is, what, 18 months after the fact now. And I'll tell you something, Jet, we drove around that coast. We probably did about 200-300 miles around that coastline. And the whole of that coastline was smashed to pieces.
Jeez.
I mean, they're trying to rebuild. But that is one thing, you know, that is one thing to say, is that whilst the social welfare aspects are a bit lacking, it has to be said that the damage you can see was and is so severe.
Mm-hmm.
It takes your breath away. Honestly, you would not believe it. You just go, what the hell is this? You know, I mean, the really eerie thing is I stood in some places exactly on the spot where some of the internet, the stuff that made it on YouTube, that did hundreds of thousands of times, I stood in those spots, you know, where they were filmed from, you know. And I knew there were the spots because I had people with me from the locale that were there, you know. And then I was speechless, you know. I mean, it was incredible.
I can't imagine trying to recover from such mass destruction without being so frustrated, you know? I mean, the patience, they have such patience there. I mean, even when all this stuff was on the internet and people were being evacuated, I mean, of course, here in the United States, where there's no patience, I mean, people would be freaking out, you know what I mean? But there, everybody was just so orderly and, you know, it was surreal. I don't know how to say it.
You know, they've had to redraw the maps in a lot of
I can imagine everything was just gone.
Well, because not only that, not only on the surface, but the land has actually dropped down in some places. So the whole topography of the landscape has changed.
That's crazy.
And we would be driving along at night, and there's ultra. I mean, you see like road construction and roadworks, flashing lights. But we saw roadworks that were just like the most brightest things ever, and we were like, "Why is that?" You know. And we soon found out because we were driving in this minibus, and all of a sudden, without warning, the road just dropped down, like almost a foot, and the bus went over. You know. And we were like, "Shit!" Like, yeah. You know. And, I mean, it's spooky. You're driving along at night, down roads, and either side of you, it's just foundations of houses that were there. And you say to somebody in the van that's knowledgeable, you know, "Oh, check this out." And they're like, yeah, you know, like 5,000 people just in this part gone, just disappeared off the earth.
It's unbelievable. And it's like you said, the part of the coastline is gone. You know, the country is smaller. And with the tsunami, I mean, roads weren't just destroyed. They were disappeared and earth was put on top of them. It's just, it's crazy. And, you know, you guys been over there. You saw it, I mean, firsthand. I mean, you've been there prior to that too, right? You saw how it used to be.
I was there personally on my birthday. I went in, it was July last year, so it was about 3-4 months after it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mess. It was a complete mess, you know what I mean? I wanted to go and see for myself, even though the transport network was completely knocked out. You know, we had to basically do a train and then, like, flag someone down, just some random person inside the road, say, "Can you take us?" "Yes, no problem." And then get somewhere else, and then when they drop us off, we'd have to get another private transport, and so on and so forth. But I wanted to see myself. And actually, when we went there, it was just me and my friend, you know, my Japanese female friend of mine. The people said, at the time, there was just salvage workers, because there was just crap everywhere, you know. There was a salvage. I mean, I saw cars. Fire escapes and all, everything that you saw. But,
crazy.
A person, like, just one of the very few civilians that hadn't left the area was like, "I'm really glad you came," you know, because all the foreigners are really scared to come because they think they'll offend us and stuff, but we want people to see, you know.
Sure.
Happened, you know. And just a small snippet. Tell you, I mean, it was quite scary. I mean, I can laugh about it now, but when we were in one of the towns, the siren went off. Again, you know, and we were in an open piece of ground. And at first, it only went off a couple of times, so we kind of ignored it. And then it went off again, like half a minute later, and it just it carried on. And we, like, started just running, you know, like frozen.
Where do you run to? You know, it's
like the whole—it was on a flat plane, so we were running towards. There was a raised ground, but we just started running, you know, as fast as we could. And what it was a drill, you know. You know, since it happened, and it was a drill, but we didn't know, obviously.
No. So you could just imagine the fear of the people. I mean, you felt it, even though it was a drill, when it was really happening. I mean, it's just,
I saw people. I actually did a documentary while I was out there.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know when it's going to air, because the Japanese record label's kind of overseeing that, but It'd be like a 10-minute thing, I think. But I met a lady. I went back to the place where I went on my birthday, which was Ishinomaki. We were lucky enough to meet a lady. There was a lady just riding on a bike, and I asked her how, because I'd forgotten kind of how to get to where I went to, like, last year. This is like last month, you know, a month ago.
Right.
And I said, oh, I remember going to this place where there was a big factory gate. There was just a gate left. Where is it? And she was like, yeah, go down there, down there, down there. And she said, I'll tell you what, I'll take you to the big memorial that's on the top of the hill, and we can see it all from there. And then when we got there, she was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I was on the day, I was riding across the Harbour Bridge that connects, like, the port area from the other port area, and my friends told me, you know, there was word of a tsunami, and they said, oh, go up the hill, go to higher ground. And she said, I was intent on carrying on my journey, which would have put her in the path of the tsunami. She was like, I listened to my friends, and that saved my life.
Yep.
She said, whilst I was just a little way up the hill, she says, I saw like 20, 30 people who were not quick enough on their feet.
That's horrible.
It disappeared into the waves. They just disappeared, you know. And, I mean, I was just like, of course, just listening and trying to take it all in. And at the same time, just completely gobsmacked by the whole thing, you know. So it's something that fascinates me. I'm sure it was everybody.
But to be there and actually see it kind of puts a more reality to it. Because, you know, you see it just doesn't seem real. I mean, even when you watch it, like, on YouTube or whatever, and you see the tsunami, and then you see the water coming, it doesn't look so fast. It just looks like, oh, look at it, it's gradually coming in. But these people are driving in their cars, next minute they're floating, you know? It was just horrible. So you guys planning on going to any more uncharted lands anytime soon?
I think the one thing I can remember in recent times was Kazakhstan. I don't think anybody's been in there yet. I mean, somebody might correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, no bands have been in there, certainly not of an independent nature anyway. The guy that usually does our Russian gigs, great guy, he's a real good friend of ours, he says he's got an in into Kazakhstan. I don't know if it's even a promoter. I think it's just some guy that's contacted him, you know, that says, oh, I'll put on a gig, you know. So we're like, let's do it. I mean, we would have done it last year, except for the fact that our Canadian tour kind of was coming up soon after the Russian dates, and we just in that small window in between the two. But, yeah, it's definitely on the cards. And obviously, you know, now there's a little bit of competition to it. We want to get there first.
You can put your flag down there. We were here first. You've conquered the area.
I'll plant a black flag or something.
Yeah, there you go. But you have to have your initials on there so you can get some creds there. Now, hey, I was talking to Matt Harvey not too long ago, and he was so excited about the tour you guys are going to be on with them and Municipal Ways, but at the time he couldn't tell me anything, and I was like, oh, that's what it was. Are you excited to be doing that tour?
Oh, sure. It's going to be great, you know.
They're great guys. It's going to be so much fun.
I mean, Municipal Ways are a different kind. They do share some similarities, but certainly from the ethnic side of things. But they're quite different to us musically, you know, and so it's going to be interesting. And then we've got Exhumed. But the other exciting thing is we've got some real blasts in the past, you know. I mean,
it's going to be fun. Between the three of you, you're all so different. I mean, Exhumed is so gory. Municipal Waste is just like a fun party metal, you know. And then you guys,
we've got the Midwest legends, you know, Repulsion. Doing some shows, and also Attitude Adjustment from classic hardcore band, you know, and Deadlow Abortions are doing Canada. There's going to be some other bands as well, as far as I know. It's going to be fun. We'll make it fun, you know, whatever the case. And spread some good ethos as well, you know. It's important to say as well as that.
And you're busy because it kicks off in October and it runs all the way to December. And then what, you go out to sea on the barge to hell?
Yeah, we're doing the barge. That should be good. I mean, I'm not sure how it's going to be like, you know, but yeah, it should be interesting, you know. So, you know.
Have you ever done anything like that before then? You've never...
I mean, we've played on boats before, but never when it's been floating. I mean, there has been like boat-based gigs. I mean, there was in the old Soviet East Germany, there was a gig on a boat at Rostock. You know, there was a punk bands, basically.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there is other things around, but never like a cruise liner.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, cool, yeah.
It should be good. I mean, the only thing, and I don't want to sort of overly sort of, you know, be negative about it, but I did hear some tales of, like, because obviously when people are contained in that kind of space, some people do go a bit OTT, and when they're like drinking that much and things go a little bit silly and stuff, you know, and overly silly, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, obviously you're going to get a mixed audience. It's going to be males and females, and, you know, just a couple of thousand of some females has been harassed and stuff, you know, on the boat, and that's not a good thing, obviously, you know.
No.
But hopefully it'll be all in the spirit that it should be.
Yeah, I think it should be okay, because a lot of the bands I've talked to that were on that 70,000 tons of metal, which is basically the same thing, they all had a great time. There wasn't so much trouble, and I think because the boats are cruise liners, like you said, there's enough room where you could kind of meander away from any situation you don't want to be near, you know, without being rude.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily directed to me, though, but I mean, you don't want anybody to have a bad...
No.
Or be subject to somebody else just going a bit too far, you know. So hopefully it'll all be okay. Again, you know, I don't want to be overly...
No, but there's good parts, too, because it is kind of a more... You're forced to be with your fans, you know what I mean? And it'll be kind of nice.
That's not a problem.
It'll be nice, you know, everybody together. I wouldn't mind going. It's the middle of winter here, at least, you know, and you're going somewhere warm, so...
Sure.
So, Barney, how would you describe your experiences in Napalm Death? And if you had to do this all over again, would you?
I would, you know. I mean, I feel very lucky. I feel very good. I don't take it for granted, but, because... You know, to do this, what I'm doing, 99% of people never do, you know.
Sure.
And it was purely by accident as well. It wasn't by design. I was quite happily working away being an engineer, you know, at a sort of car parts manufacturing company in Birmingham, you know. I was a working job, but I liked my job, you know. It was quite a technical job.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden they're like, the singer's left Napalm Death, you know, like Shane and Mickey. And they were like, do you want to join? I was like, let me think about that for 2 seconds. Yes. And so that was that, really. So it was great, you know. And it looks like I've never taken it for granted. You know, I still feel lucky to be doing what I do. And that's part of the reason why I try and make it... everything to the absolute best that I can, never go to the motions. I think that would not be a good thing at all. So yeah, I would do it again. There are certain decisions that we made as a band that if I had the time over again, I would do differently. But then again, even with that, having said that, you don't get to push forward with the good things if you don't learn from the bad.
Sure.
You know, so they did serve their purpose in a way. You know, it's been great. And the one of the things as well that's kept it for me is the independence of the band. I mean, we've never allowed others to tell us what to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're always open to ideas and criticisms, for sure. You know, I've never had a problem, for example, with negative reviews or bad press or people's negative comments about the band. That's fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinion,
sure,
no matter how severe or otherwise, you know. I don't have a problem with that at all. So, you know, it's... I've got a very open mind, you know. I'm very philosophical about things. And, just have a good time doing it, you know, always, you know, like I say, we've always had our independence of thought as a band, and that suits me, because if we were hamstrung by those kind of industry things, I don't think we would have lasted half.
Right. So when you get back, right, when you get back from your excursion on the barge to hell, what are you guys doing? I mean, it's like you're jam-packed. Do you get any time off?
Yeah, I mean, we'll take a long, like, December to early January because of that, quite aside from the fact that we'll probably just want to have our own space for a little while. I mean,
yeah.
I got stuff to do that kind of doesn't get done in a year because I'm so busy with Napalm. So that's the other thing you have to consider, that while you've got time, you need to get certain things done, you know. And that's effectively what I'll do, you know. So we do have time. And, you know, when we're in Europe, we generally play at the weekends, you know, rather than in the week time. So we do have that time in the week as well. So, you know, we do play a lot of gigs here, but they're arranged. We have the experience now to have them arranged a bit better than what it might have been in the past.
Sure.
So it does give us a little bit of breathing space, you know.
Sure. So did you get to go on any kind of vacation, though, or relax and just not do anything?
yeah, I mean, when I go, you wouldn't think I'd want to travel but I do, you know, I go to, like, Japan, you know.
Sure.
Quite a bit. I'm going to Chile second time this year. I'm actually going to stay on an eco farm, you know, like ones where animals aren't caged or anything, you know. They basically, you can open your door in the morning or you'll probably have a tape here on the end of you.
Lovely. You know? Lovely.
I don't know. I get a kick out of it. Maybe I'm different. I don't know. I do get out into the world, because obviously when you're touring, you don't always have time to get out in the day, and you always feel a bit like, you always feel a bit like you haven't done the full experience because you couldn't, because you were trying to sleep off the 15-hour journey or whatever, you know. But
yeah.
I do travel as well, you know.
That's good. At least you get to chill a little bit, because I know it's like you said, Napalm is like, you're always thinking about it. I'm sure even when you're not working or touring, you're still thinking about, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to do this.
You know what, this is in all honesty, Jet, I work, if I'm at home even in the UK, I'll be working on Napalm every day.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily on the promotion side of things or writing music, but just the structure of the band.
Sure, there's so much, always.
We're very self-contained, you know. So there are certain things that I do, we do, and that requires daily attention.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's good to take yourself away just for a little bit, just so you don't get on everybody's nerves.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, despite the fact that I am philosophical about stuff, there are times as much as anybody else when I want to scream, to be honest, and I just have to take myself out of it for a couple of days.
Sure. Now,
everything in life has its frustration.
Yeah. Ah, yeah. Yeah, you need a little bit of time off. This interview that we're doing tonight is going to air on you the day, Election Day here in the United States.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, you know, I mean, I will just say this, is that I'm not a biggest lover of politicians, depending on which day you catch me. You know, I think they're all the crap, to be honest, in the main. But I can tell you now, and I think I would largely speak for most people in Europe, is that we don't really want to see too much of a change.
Mm-hmm.
Romney is a lunatic, you know. I mean, seriously, you know. And I know, talking to some of my European friends, we're really nervous about having a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
With his finger on the button, for one thing. I know, because, and this is the one thing that bothers me, this is similar to Reagan as well, he believes in the certain things about this conflict, you know, that has a real religious element to it, you know.
Mm.
And I think when you have people like that at the forefront, it makes things ever all the more dangerous. Mm-hmm. And not only that, there's other things too. I think the things that have moved forward, don't get me wrong, I don't agree with Obama on everything.
No, things nobody does, yeah.
Specifics like the drone attacks in Pakistan, Afghanistan, I don't think you can hold the moral high ground when you're overseeing stuff like that, you know. I mean, that's my personal opinion, you mm-hmm. know. But I think where there have been, in the main, I actually quite like the guy, you know. And I think that he has done good things, and on the level like preserving like women's rights and women's access to sexual health and abortions as well, you mm. know, and things like that is vital, you know, for it's a human rights issue, you know, and you have to preserve that, you know. And I think if Romney comes in, I think a lot of those things will be set back,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think people in the workplace will find themselves not having access to unions and stuff, because I think union, the voice for the sport will strip right back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a whole raft of things basically that really are quite disconcerting, you know. I think, you know, business will be able to treat its employees with any way it wishes, you know, there'll be very little protection there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I mean, the one thing that amazes me, that I would, it's something you really should cry about if it wasn't so ludicrous, you know, is the fact that everybody was making such a song and dance about Obamacare, but what I think a certain percentage of people in America fail to understand is that you have to have the basis of a public health system, you know, to give treatment and a protection to those who have nothing,
mm-hmm.
that haven't got insurance, that don't have access to anything that could be called a medical facility. You have to have that, you know, and for them to sort of people to completely try and smash apart that whole effort to construct a public health system, I think it's just inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
The self-interest and the willingness of people to continue with this thing that allows private healthcare companies to dictate when they treat people and when they don't. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing of this whole scandalous situation about pre-existing conditions, mm-hmm. about them being able to turn around and tell really ill people that we won't pay for your treatment because we found this condition in your medical records down the years, and we consider it to be progressive enough to warrant this clause in your policy, meaning that we don't pay for your treatment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just scandalous. You know,
it is, and it's been that way for years, no matter who's in there, you know?
Exactly. And that's one thing where the old Obamacare thing, as it's called, didn't go far enough, is it didn't take on the private healthcare. That's what you need to do, is break mm-hmm. that stranglehold. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I'm speaking for somebody who has a public healthcare system, you know, in the UK. And I'll tell you what, all those people over in the US that were waving placards about communism and socialism, and, you know, a public healthcare system like the UK, and all these right-wing like congressmen and MPs from over here in England discrediting the public healthcare system, well, they're fucking idiots. To be
mm-hmm.
I can't really put it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
They're so off the mark, mm-hmm. you know, it's untrue, you know. And it makes me really angry. I know I shouldn't get angry about stuff like that, but it just annoys me, first and foremost, that those with the least cannot get
mm-hmm.
a health facility. It's not humane.
No.
If people always talk about a civilized society, if you can't give care and attention to those that need it, then you're not civilized, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not civilized over here. At least you don't have to worry about having to vote for anybody over here this year.
Well, protection, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, in the main, you know, and I know it's not always as cut and dried as this, but the general thing is that Romney's going to present the biggest interests and Obama is going to kind of try and look after those that underneath that a little bit more. And I know which one I'd rather have ahead of it. And like I say, that's coming from somebody who, if you catch me on 3 or 4 days of the week, I'll say that politicians are all idiots and self-serving, you know. But whilst we've got the system that we have, obviously there are things that are preferential, you know, to other things. And Romney just scares me.
I think it scares a lot of people.
There's one more thing to say on that, is that, and this is the very basis of my beliefs, is that you cannot mix government and religion. As soon as you start governing things on a religious, non-proven basis, you're in trouble.
Okay, well, with that being said, we're we're going to let you go, and probably right about now in the program, I'll be checking the... see who's winning in the election. So we'll see who it is. And I'm going to let you get going, but just hang on the line for 1 second. I'll get a quick ID from you. And thank you so much for taking the time to do this with us tonight.